one. Welcome all. Step right up. Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 113 is coming at you right now. Portal Gaming Podcast, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. We're a podcast brought to you from a store called The Portal in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, with daily postings, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. I'm your host for this episode, The Brant. I am on my own. For this episode, Brian has vamosed off to Alabama to visit some family. Kathy is out with Zephra seeing Mary Poppins. It is just me. So, honestly, there's a lot of great games to review that I've played with Brian, and great games to review that I've played with Kathy. So those episodes need to happen so they can talk about them. But for today, you got me. Hope you enjoyed our top 10 of 2018. Sound wasn't quite what I wanted to be. We had to record in a room that was kind of airy and spacey. Wasn't my favorite, but I think it's fine. I think you can hear everything. Thanks to Larry, special guest Larry, who's now been on many times, for joining us, because that was fun. And I thought Kathy did a great job there, too. She's just not interested in listing games out in numerical order. Not anything, any reason, just it was more fun for her. And I loved how she was just interjecting games, which was neat. So we got to hear about more games, which to me is the fun of the whole thing. I like listening to all the top 10 of 2018 because I get to hear about all the games. And that's not very repetitive. I mean, there's some games that you know are going to be on people's lists. Root is big, and Underwater Cities is big, and Keyforge is big, and various other games. I'm probably missing some. Oh, Brass. So you're hearing those on a lot of lists. You know, they're the best games of the year. That's what you can hear. So it's kind of fun to hear those others. Speaking of that, that's what I want to do for you. I want to list my other games that were potential top 10s for you as well. So I'm going to do that on the back half of this episode. This one is entitled, We Do Not Grant You the Rank of Master, because these are my games that are not the top 10 of the year. So that's episode 113. Alrighty, Newsfront, I just want to mention what we did on the last episode. The store has really been reworked, so if you're in the area, definitely come and check that out. My next task, actually, there is to pull more games from the demo library. I know that sounds scary to people. People are like, no, don't pull games, those are my favorite. But there's just a lot of things in there that don't get played as much, and it's a little bit of a mess. So if you're swinging through the area, haven't been recently, definitely check it out. It's looking really neat on that front. And a little bit of lull on activity. This is kind of the post-Christmas. This is when retail kind of slows down a little bit and whatnot. But obviously we still have the game nights and things going on. Thursday nights, Sunday afternoons are the big board game nights. And there's miniatures and cards. Keyforge have been playing on Thursday and a lot of other things. So definitely want to check all that out. Hey, I got a whole bunch of reviews for you here. So let me start off with Dulasaur Island. This is from Pandasaurus Games. So Dulasaur Island is a two-player version of Dinosaur Island, kind of the bigger game, and they've streamlined it down. So what's different? Well, it really focuses on the two-player. So there's like a card drafting phase, and it's like slightly multi-use cards. They have two uses, and you can discard them for a third. So it's definitely multi-use cards. But basically, you draft cards. You're building dinosaur parks. You're building dueling dinosaur parks to attract the most visitors. And the trigger is when you get to a certain number of visitors, 25, 35, or 45. I assume it represents thousands, based on a short, medium, or long game. Honestly, it's not that different. Short to long is probably three rounds, so I don't think a long game is bad to play in this case. But anyway, so that's kind of the idea. So visitors are your victory points. That's what you're doing. So the first thing it does is there's like a card drafting phase. And in the card drafting phase, you draft these cards that either give you a dinosaur DNA pattern, so you can make a dinosaur, or a ride, or a food place, or souvenir shop you could put in your park. Then next thing you do is this interesting draft. So it's kind of a nice split you choose. The first player draws, I want to say it's five dice, might be six. Six dice from the bag, lines them all up. You've got these bonus tokens that are out that says, hey, if you take this die, you get this bonus. If you take this die. So that phase takes a little while, but it's really not overwhelming. There's one die that's set off to the side, as well as they draw three specialists, put two out, and discard one. And now players go and they draft those cards and those dice. It must be actually five dice because every player drafts three and there's one left over. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So you draft the cards and the dice, and you take those. Specialists add abilities. Dice give you DNA. There's different types of DNA, just like in Dinosaur Island. So you go through that, and then the die that's left over will up your threat for that round. Again, similar. Then after that, you get to do a little phase building your park. So you're spending money, you're spending DNA, you can trade out DNA actually by discarding cards and swapping advanced for basic DNA and vice versa. That's kind of interesting, simultaneous. Build up your park, kind of gain your bonuses. And then there's a little PR phase, so whoever's behind, oh, you score your visitors based on excitement levels. So bigger dinosaurs, bigger teeth will attract more visitors. And then the PR phase, like whoever's behind gets to take a little bonus. And it's an interesting little track. And whatever one you take, the other player has to take the bonus that's behind yours. And then that track slides up, so the bonuses get better. So the game really ramps up. There's definitely some like engine building in terms of what you can do. And you just keep going until somebody gets that threshold. Mm-hmm. And then there's final scoring. So final scoring is going to entail the dinosaurs you have in your park. So you might have really dangerous dinosaurs, and you know they're scoring you some visitors, but at the end of the game they're getting you a lot of visitors for points, as well as trying to create sets. You want like a ride, a souvenir shop, and a food place, and a few other small bonuses like cards might give you. Whoever has the most visitors wins. I really like it. I basically like this better than Dinosaur Island, and this is rare. Often you'll hear me complain like, well, just because a game is simpler or easier to teach or more streamlined or quicker to play doesn't mean it's better. Castle Burgundy, case in point, I like the dice game, but I want to play Castles of Burgundy. You know, I'm playing the dice game because I don't have time or it's faster to teach people or something, but not. I like Castle Burgundy way better. In this case, I like this one better. I like the streamlining. I totally understand where people would like Dinosaur Island. I'm not even against playing Dinosaur Island. But there was a lot of fiddly things. The hooligans were fiddly, the drafting cards and the cost and what am I going to get. And people cite the you can't get a DNA in the first round in like a four-player game. And the dice always kind of left things behind. Like there were so many dice and the threat level would go up. So your security was just really tight. And it still is in this one, but it just doesn't feel quite as punishing. So I really like the streamliningness of this. It's like 45 minutes to play a game, which is, you know, pretty solid little game. But I really enjoy it. I feel like this game itself is better to me than Dinosaur Island. So the one negative would be, you know, it's two-player. So it would almost be to me, own two copies of this, and then people are like, oh, you want to play Dinosaur Islands? Hey, let's play side-by-side Dulosaur Islands and see who does, you know, the best or something like that, or winner plays the other. I don't know. It probably doesn't really make sense. You know, this has its kind of two-player-ness, but I would love if they expanded this one, although they already have the other version. So, again, I don't really have anything against Dinosaur Island. I enjoy it. I love the theme. The theme is what's bringing me into playing that game. But the extras and the length, just in that case, because this exists, I want to play this. So I really, really like Dulosaur Island. one of my favorites from this year. I actually played this in December, though. I guess I didn't put it on my list. See, I really try to think retail for my 2018. So I guess a lot of people are putting Underwater Cities in their top. And like I said, that would have been my favorite game. And I guess I'm putting that in 2019. But who knows if I'll remember. So somebody will have to remind me when we get to the end of 2019. And I'm like, did I put Underwater Cities? Or I'll probably say on the 2019 list, well, this would have been on my list, but I'm removing it. So, eh. Whatever it is, the point is to talk about the games, not the end result of where they end up on a list, in my mind. All right, got a chance to play Dice Throne Season 2. So I had played Dice Throne Season 1, and they're really the same. Well, they're really the same to me in terms of play, but man, artwork and components, not even really a comparison. The artwork was good in the first one, and the components were fine, but this one, they've upped it with game trays, and it holds everything. And I gotta say, like, this is eye candy. Of all eye candy. You get a tray with your individual character who has special rules and dice. So Dice Throne is like a Yahtzee dice battling game. It comes down to that. There's not too much to the game. You're drawing cards, rolling dice, and trying to trigger various abilities, and all the characters play different. So I think there's six or eight in the box here. It's a big box, and then you go back to the original one, which has six. You got 14 characters, because they just play together. I wasn't a big fan of Dice Throne Season 1, but I played it three-player, And multiplayer just has really quirky mechanisms. I appreciate that they're trying not to let people team up, but instead of attack left, you roll a random die to see who you can attack. And that really could just, instead of, well, I really should attack this person because it's smarter, it just leaves you with, well, I can't attack this person, I have to attack the other person. And I didn't like that mechanism. And I know a lot of people have told me Dice Throne is just intended to be a two-player game. Man, though, I tell you, at PAX Unplugged, it was almost unforgettable. I'm sitting next to a group, and we were playing Dwarves Fall or Dwarves Winter or something. I'm not sure which one it was. I don't remember. And they were playing six-player Dice Throne, and like they were having so much fun that it made me be like, okay, what's this game? I want to check this out. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a review copy, but I played this with Matt Bartlett, Jen, the board game librarian's husband. Thank you. And this is from Roxley Games. I did not mention that. And it was really enjoyable. I really saw the draw to the game. I think the price tag Kickstarter was like $100, or it was $100 to buy it at PAX, which is just a lot. Like, the components are great, and if you're buying for that, it's awesome. I feel like there's probably a good amount of replayability. I'm sorry that I don't remember if it's 6 or 8 characters. I think it's 6, but I don't want to sell the game short. Yeah, that price point puts it a little bit out of reach for me personally to just pick up. But I could see having a good time with this and battling it out and whatnot. And it's pretty easy to just pick up and start teaching people, so that's kind of nice that it doesn't feel like one of those two-player games. It's like, all right, well, you're not really going to understand. Although, for my money, I played Dulasaur Island over our Dice Throne Season 2. But I really liked it a lot better than when I played Dice Throne Season 1 with 3, so I get that. And I probably knew that at the time. But there was that. Okay, next up, I got to play Australia. So this is a Martin Wallace game from Stronghold Games, and it kind of has a Cthulhu theme. So it's like you're building farmlands and stretching out through Australia, and in comes Cthulhu and his crew to try to bust it up. So it really is like a Euro trash style game, if you'll allow me to use that term. And so on a turn, you're just spending these little cubes and action points, and the whole timing mechanism is one of those whoever's in last place gets to go next. I think Patchwork, a lot of people think Takedo. So that's a really fun mechanism. And you put these cubes out on your board, and then you get to take the actions. So you can build army men to fight, you can lay train tracks, you can build farms, which really just score points. You can draft like heroes or characters from a line of cards and whatnot. And then eventually you get to Cthulhu's. He's on like space 22 or 23. And now he will join in, and he'll take a turn. And when he takes a turn, the enemies move. You kind of draw from a deck of cards, like there's an attack and draw and movement deck. And then there'll be special events that Cthulhu will do. They're pretty much flip a tile over, because the Cthulhu tiles start dormant, and these ones will flip them over, so they start moving and attacking you. So they will move towards your farms, they will blight your farms, and that will score points. And any monsters you don't kill will be worth points. So Cthulhu can actually win the game, which is interesting. Really enjoyed the game. The Cthulhu theme is backseat enough for me that it didn't bother me. Cthulhu doesn't really bother me. I enjoyed Mansions of Madness, and I'd be down to play an Arkham Horror. Arkham Horror LCG I really enjoy. I just don't get into it for whatever reason, and it's so funny because people get so into it. But like, if you're going to tell me Star Wars or Lord of the Rings or Cthulhu, they don't even compare in my mind. Like, I'm so interested in the other ones. But that's just how it goes. And again, I'm not against it. I don't have a problem with it. But it wasn't really a big deal here. It was just the monsters that were attacking. The combat mechanism is really neat. It's like pushing your luck. You're drawing from a combat deck to see if your units damage the Cthulhu monsters, or if they damage you. I'm sorry, I'm calling them Cthulhu monsters. That's probably like totally the wrong term. I know there's elder gods, but I don't think the other gods are in this. Shoggoth might be one. So, I don't know. And yeah, you're building that little Euro engine and gaining cards to get victory points. But the one thing you need to know is Cthulhu wins ties, because I tied Cthulhu at like 47 points, and Cthulhu wins those ties. So that was disheartening. But all in all, I really enjoyed the game. I would totally play it again. I heard the solo play on it is really, really good. I want to try to make sure we get Brian's perspective. He played a game that I don't think everybody there was as enthralled. So I would like to see what he said, but I wanted to get my review of the game in. And he, like I said, he's off to another state now that all the chaos is over with Christmas and shopping and all that and visiting family. So I wanted to get that in. That is Australia from Martin Wallace and Stronghold Games. I definitely give it a recommend, a strong play. Maybe even consider purchasing it because it was very, very good. And the production was nice. It was thick tiles and good chits. A little bit off-centered for some of them. I know Harrison had a copy that was a little funny like that. But overall, the production is nice. It's a little more on the Euro-y end, but good pieces. Let's see. What's next? I played Liguria. And this is a game from Queen Games. I had heard about this from Matt Riddle of Ridback. Like, what are they? The Fleet? Oh, no, I can't. The Fleeples. Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. And I'd heard Matt Riddle say, oh, Liguria is a great, tight Euro game. It was fun. It was a great game. It was a very good game. There is no theme in this game. They tried to make a theme. You are going around through the Liguria Pass or canal or some waterway that I don't know about, I believe in Italy, and you're picking up paint off of islands and bringing it back to paint things, and you're defending the islands with soldiers. So the soldiers go and they seize the paint and bring it back. So anyway, the way the game works is there's a little like turn selection, action selection, drafting phase where you take your meeple and you put it out and you decide, oh, how many tiles do I want to be able to draw from like a tile, like a drafting tile thing, and how many coins do I want to get and where do I want to be in turn order. So the further down you go, the more tiles you get, but the less turn order, and you get kind of the leftover tiles. So you're drafting all these tiles that go on your player board, and they kind of engine build. They upgrade how far your ship can move, how many paint tiles, cans you can pick up, and various other things, buildings that you can build, and I don't know, it's so themeless. You're picking up various things, and then you get, what were they? They're like little tiles for you can turn in, you know, turn in these color paints, and you get victory points at the end of the game, as well as you pick up soldiers. There's a bunch of different tiles. So you're drafting those tiles, kind of in that order. Then you go and you draft cards. And the interesting thing with the cards is they give you little bonuses, like, oh, you can upgrade something. So all the tiles can pretty much be flipped, and they upgrade to giving you victory points. And you get, steering wheels for how far you can travel that round. And you also get a negative or a positive. So there's like a negative point total. And that's not actually victory points. But at the end of the game, if the negative on your ship cards is less than the positive on your ship cards, you lose like 10 points for everyone that you're below. So as you're drafting these cards, it's really important that you get some of the positive ones. There are other ways to get positives. I believe there's like churches or something like that that'll give you positive points. And other things you can attain to get positive points. But this card drafting is really important. So you do that. After you do that, then everybody goes in turn order and they move their ship around. And that's kind of interesting because everybody has their personal board in front of them, and that's your port. And your ship moves around, and you put like three islands between all the players. And you can move to the islands. You can take them over with soldiers. You get paint. You put it on your ship. And then you actually have to get on the ship card. You have to get the ability to turn around. Otherwise, you go all the way around the circle. And you want to stop at people's ports and pick up the paint they have. Because they have some paint that's available, and then get back to yours and drop the paint off. It goes behind a little screen in terms of all that. So that's basically what you're doing. It was very fun. It was very interesting. We were playing it. I think we started at like 12:30 at night. It was not long. It was like an hour. The drafting was interesting. It's all those like classic Euro mechanisms. Drafting and recipe fulfillment, resource. The movement, you know, was a little bit there. And then all these positives and negatives that you can pick up. But we really had fun. I had a lot of fun because I won. I would definitely play the game again. But man, the theme is just like, I almost want to remove the theme because it was brutal. But that's Liguria from Queen Games. Kind of an older title there, going back. Okay, speaking of the Fleeples, I really should wait to review this game with Kathy, because we've played it a lot, and I really want Brian to play it, but I cannot wait, because I really, 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 really like this game. It's my favorite game of 2019. I know that sounds silly, being that it's January 9th, but it's going to continue to be one of my favorite games for this year. And this is Fleet the Dice Game. So I've already played Fleet, which is a card game, and I really enjoy that game, and I'd like to actually play it a little bit more, but this dice game is really good. And the dice game is a roll and write, and I typically don't like roll and writes. Now, I typically am just kind of like bleh on roll and writes, but this one is so good. It's really heavy. It's a heavy roll and write, which really just puts it into a medium weight category. The game says 30 minutes on the box. There's just no way. I've played some solo games in 30 minutes, but two players been 45 minutes to an hour, and four player was an hour and a half. That's one of my negatives on the game. Like Race for the Galaxy, it's a lot to teach players. You really got to rely on players to just understand or try and do it themselves. I think it's well laid out. I've heard complaints on the rulebooks. I have no issue with the rulebook. There's maybe one or two things that aren't in there that I think are pretty easy to interpret. But anyway, this is from Ben Pinchback and Matt Riddle. And it's from Eagle Griffin Games. And it's actually pretty thematic for a roll and write. So what happens is there's 10 rounds. You're trying to score the most points. Points come from various places. Catching fish, getting licenses for catching fish, building buildings in your wharf, and for just launching boats. And then there's a couple bonuses you can get here and there. So what you do is, the very first phase of the game is the boating phase. And in the boat phase, you get to roll a set of dice, and then you draft. And they've got different boats. There's lobsters and cod and oysters and swordfish and all sorts of things. I know those aren't all fish, but they call them the fish dice. And you get to fill in kind of on like a column that's going there. And when you fill in, you either get a license or a boat, or your choice of a license or a boat. Licenses basically are kind of giving you the right to catch, like launch boats, but it just happens naturally because you get a license first. But they give you special abilities, so they all have a special power for the game. And then boats give you the ability to catch fish. The next phase is then the income phase. So you basically have an income of one unless you upgrade various buildings or get the lobster license, and then you can increase your income. And what happens with income is you gain a coin, and on actually, it's a roll and write with two pieces of paper. So on your right-hand piece of paper, you get to fill in a little coin slot. And every three coins, later in the game every four, and very late in the game every five, gives you a free box. You can just fill in a box anywhere on your sheet. So income can be really important because it's kind of your ability to have a variety, a versatility, rather. Next is the fishing phase. So fishing only happens in rounds 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. So you only fish every other. Every boat gets a fish. And then the last phase is the town phase. You roll the town dice, which is actually town... I forgot one thing earlier. Town dice equal number of players plus one boat. So somebody could actually end up getting a boat here. And the town has a whole bunch of things. There's a harbor track with a bunch of like big fishing things. Like you can go out cruising to look for fish, and you can get a barge to fill extra fish. And there's a bunch of buildings that give you upgrades. Like, hey, you can take dice as wilds temporarily, or you get more money. There's a market where however many fish you caught, you get more coins. And so this can be really prolific if you're getting a lot of coins and a lot of free things. What I forgot to mention is in each of those phases, it is a wonderful draft where you go around from the captain, who's the first player, you draft one die, and there's one die more than the number of players, and everybody gets the die that's left. I love that. That's La Granja. It's so good. It's the thing that Coimbra needs, which would make that game even better. That leftover die does something. And that's really, really good. And it happens in both those phases. That's it. What gets overwhelming for people is just what all the licenses do. And there's three levels of the licenses. And what all the boats do. And what all this. And it everything piggybacks. There's so many combos. Oh, get this license. Every time you launch a boat, you get a coin. Oh, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to launch two boats and get two coins. Oh, now that two coins gives me a free box. I'm going to mark this. That means I go fishing. All my things gain fish. Oh, the oyster boat lets me get a fish and a coin when I go fishing. So I'll put another coin over here. Hey, that gives me another thing to unlock. So you have rounds and turns like that. And it's so good. I love that. Is it slow? Kind of. But the reason is because there's tough decisions. Because you can't make the decisions quickly. Because they are tough. You look at the dice and you're like, ah, I really should get a lobster because I want to get into lobster fishing. But if I get that cod, I could launch this second boat. And the second boat would give me coins and this. And I get this upgrade. And I love that. I love the decisions. So It's in the roll and write category, no doubt, but I guess sometimes I turn my nose down on them. I don't really mean to, and there's a lot of the big ones like Steamrollers and Welcome 2 I haven't even played, so that's not fair. But I just love those decisions where, like, I actually have to sit and think about it. It's not just a clear cut, oh, I'm going for shrimp this game and shrimp will win, so I'll grab the shrimp die when it comes up. But I have to actually think it out. So I'm really, really into this game. The one issue would be teaching it. It's almost a game if you're willing to teach it to people and not play. I think that would be really beneficial so you can get around everybody. There's a lot of extras and bonuses. Oh, after this phase, do this. Oh, your income is increased here because of this. Blah, 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 blah. And people are going to ask a lot of questions about what all the buildings do and why that strategy. So there's a little bit there. I really feel like it's probably an hour with four players, and we were a little long on ours. And it's about 45 minutes with two players, so it's about in that spot. Really good solo game. It's creative in that it has little tiles that go around, and it blocks your spaces, like from the bottom up, so eventually you can't get the bonuses. And creative in how it does that, I'm not going to go into that. Anyway, I have gushed. This is an excellent, excellent game. I love it. I want to play it more. I'm pretty sure Kathy's in the same vein, but I'll let her give some of her opinions on that. And I couldn't wait to talk about it. So that's Fleet the Dice Game from Eagle Griffin Games. Cool, two more for you. Pandemic, Fall of Rome. I got a chance to play this. Did I play it other than solo? I think I pretty much just played solo. So anyway, this is the new Pandemic. This is from Matt Leacock and Paolo Mori and Z-Man Games. And in this one, what's interesting is it incorporates dice. So there are barbarians invading Rome, and your job is to protect against them. So the barbarians kind of come out, they're the cubes, and they sit on the board a la Pandemic, and you draw cards, and they kind of move on these paths closer to Rome. So they're moving towards Rome, and if Rome gets sacked, you know, similar idea of a breakout. What is it called in Pandemic? I can't believe I can't remember. Outbreak. Breakout. If there's an outbreak in Rome, then you lose the game. So you're trying to push them all back. And so what's interesting is you can recruit these little legionnaires, and then you roll dice to combat them. So when you move into a space, you can't just remove a barbarian, you have to fight it. And the dice are interesting because they basically always do something. So they can either just remove a cube, they can remove one of your legionnaires, which is interesting because there's a negative, they can remove a legionnaire and a cube, or a legionnaire and two cubes, or they could trigger your special ability on your character, which can be really good as well. So it really kind of spans the gamut. You have to prep for that. But it's actually really interesting because it makes you kind of overstock on what you want to do with legionnaires. And then you can drop legionnaires off and you can build buildings. I apologize. I don't remember what they're called. Some kind of city structure or barracks maybe is what they are, where you can recruit legionnaires. And as cubes invade the spaces with the legionnaires and the barracks, they will get removed, but they'll keep the cubes from coming in. So you kind of have that protection element. So you kind of have that Euro piece where you can know, okay, if a cube gets placed here, this will get eliminated and that's guaranteed, or you can go battle them to kind of set them back. The other part that's interesting is they're not all the same. So you have to turn in sets. There's five different barbarians invading instead of the four different colors, and you have to turn in sets of cards, and it's like 3, 4, 4, 5, 5. So it's a little bit less. And if you turn those sets of cards in, you negotiate with them, and now you can go to those spaces and you can turn them into legionnaires. So that's kind of interesting. The abilities on the characters are interesting. They don't feel standard because the way the game has changed, the special abilities all the characters have feel different from the other game. It's real good. It really is. I'm always impressed with these Pandemics. I wasn't a huge Pandemic Cthulhu fan, go figure, given my, not like I just, it felt too, I don't know, wasn't there, but all the other ones I've really liked. I really like Iberia a lot. I really like this Fall of Rome. I don't mind the dice at all. It's kind of fun to have Pandemic with dice, although it is ironic. Like, the reason I'm playing Pandemic is because there's no dice. Surprise! There's dice! So I find that kind of interesting on that front. But all in all, really good. I've only played it solo where I played two characters. There actually is a solo in there, and I played the two characters. But I played it twice, and I think I won twice. But I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to hopefully get a chance to find people to play this with. But that's Pandemic Fall of Rome. All right, last up here is Scorpius Freighter. So Scorpius Freighter is a game from AEG. It's designed by Matt Dunstan and David Short. And it kind of looks like a pick up and deliver in space. And it sort of is, but it's really action selection resource management. So there are three rondels, and the rondels have these like government ships going around. And so what you do on your turn is you have four characters that are kind of tucked under your board. And you tuck some of the characters further under. They all have a little hand on them. The number of characters you tuck is how far you can move. And you can actually only do one or two. And then you move one of those ships, one or two spaces, and there's a bunch of actions. And you do the actions. So you've got your ship, and you're a freighter trying to move illegal goods. And so you can add tiles to your board that will store extra goods. You can add like specialty tiles that'll give you special abilities. You can do side contracts where you trade for things, or you can do major contracts where you can score a lot of points and get upgrade abilities. The level at which you get to do the action is the leftover hand. So however many crew members you don't use is how good that ability is. Once you get down to zero or one crew members visible, you get them all back. So you just kind of keep doing that. Which isn't a major piece. You can also upgrade your crew members to get special abilities, so you have that unique to your ship. And there's a bunch of other advances in the box, like you could play on the opposite side of the board that are a little bit asymmetrical, but not really. I actually don't know. We were going to try that side, and when I looked at it, I was like, I think the limitation doesn't really make sense. I think the openness is almost better. So I almost felt like the easier side I would enjoy a little bit more. All in all, I really enjoyed it. The one negative I would have with the game is I played with Larry, and I had a crew member that said, hey, you get 3 points for every crew member you upgrade, so I got 12 points. And Larry had one that said, unlimitedly, you get 2 points for every side contract. So Larry did 11 side contracts and got 22 points. And the side contracts are pretty good compared to the regular contracts. So his was unlimited, and he got 10 extra points, and he beat me by 10 extra points in the game. So I never understand that in games when one card is limited and the others are not, and it's begging you to take advantage of that. And Larry did and beat me. Hats off to him. So that was just a little negative I had on the game. I forgot to mention. As it goes around the rondelle, those government ships, when they get a full circle around, they steal a cargo from you. So if you're the person to move the rondelle around, they take a cargo. And then if any of them have four on them, you play like one last round and the game is over in two-player, five in three-player, six in four-player. I'm not sure what that would do. You'd have some downtime and it'd be hard to predict in four-player, so I could see this game being a little bit slow. The interaction is kind of there because you're trying to take things before other people do, but I think there's still good tiles that come out, so I'm not sure that it'll be the greatest four-player game. I could see two and three being better for this game. But all in all, I really enjoyed it. I would play it again. Didn't blow me away, but that's Scorpius Freighter from AEG. Okay, I don't want to take long here, but I just wanted to talk about the other games that I thought were really good in 2018. I didn't really put them in order. Kind of originally I was thinking that I'd have some, and on the last episode I think I said that I had 22 games that were kind of in my top. But I thought of a few others that I'm not sure they were my top, but they were just really kind of unexpected as well. So I just want to run through these games. It looks like I've got 17. I got 20 now games. So that puts me up to 30 games. So that almost makes me think that 2018 might have been better than 2017. There were just some amazing games in 2017 that really blew me away. So I'm just going to run through these relatively quickly. I'm not going to describe a lot of them. But I just want to run through. So, first off, starting just with some, you know, heavy Euros from the year. Newton didn't take, you know, didn't amaze me. But it really was fun. I know Kathy really was down on that. The one that amazed me a lot more was Wendake. I love the action selection, and it was really hard to not put that one in my top 10. But I probably could have used some more plays. And in the end, I love the action selection, but the other pieces of the game weren't necessarily my favorite there. Founders of Gloomhaven was another one where some of the assets were amazing. I actually think the theme is kind of interesting to be building the city of Gloomhaven. But at the end it wasn't crazy there. Expansity was really good. Brian brought that one up. Really, really enjoyable, kind of lighter game with good decisions in it. For two-player games, Caper was excellent. Brian had talked about that. Lost City Rivals was excellent. I guess that actually plays 2, 3, and 4. Same to Ticket to Ride New York. I didn't know that I needed a 15-minute Ticket to Ride game, and I do. Spirit of the Wild was a really great game that came out from Mattel that was in retail besides our store, Target, and other places like that. And I really enjoyed that. And kind of on that two-player front as well, War Chest was excellent. Peep Motz was such a great card game. Like Kathy alluded to, we gave it away twice. It was so good. I wanted other people to play it. In terms of that. Let's see, what else here? And then kind of like my light hit of the year was Bandido. This tiny little game that you're working cooperatively to try to trap in a prisoner before he escapes. And that game went over really well. Other games that were really close to making my top 10, The Quacks of Quedlinburg really turned out to be a solid game. The Reckoners I really enjoyed. I didn't think that the table talk would be nearly as present as it was. Paper Tales, between Quacks and Paper Tales, these are probably fighting for my 11 and 12. Those would probably be my two. Really like Paper Tales. Plays pretty well with 7. The solo is really good. I'm actually thinking I need to take Paper Tales out and play it again. It was that good. So that was a really fun game in terms of all that. Good Critters was excellent. I played a game of Good Critters recently where I wasn't sure that everybody, they were just kind of happily splitting up the pot. And then it got to me and I really wanted to shake things up. And they said, okay, go ahead and split it up. I said, no, I did. And they're like, oh, well, you didn't give us anything. I was like, yeah, no, that's right. I'm going to take everything. And they're like, you can do that? I was like, well, let's see. And I made it work. I got one person to vote yes and everybody else to fight amongst themselves. And that sold that game for me. That was real good. Let's see. Rescue Polar Bears was a really good and underrated cooperative game, although it's brutally hard. Drop It was excellent. Kathy talked about that and places I talked that brought that and taught it. I really saw it played a lot, so that was really good. Symphony No. 9, I just didn't get enough plays. I think I only got to play it once. I really liked it. The group I played it with wasn't as big, so I wanted to get to play it with some other groups. But that was a really interesting... I'm not sure the theme really mattered, but hey, why not that theme if the theme doesn't matter? And then the other two, I really didn't expect to like Between Two Castles of Mad King Ludwig. I don't like Castles of Mad King Ludwig at all, really. And I never played Between Two Cities, so never thought the point, and had a blast with it. The playing of the game is the learning of the game is the fun of the game. So I'm not sure after a while if it would get old, but I could definitely see the benefit of having a game like that around. And Subatomic is the other game that I thought was really good. I've only had one play of this, but this, you know, they continue to do this at Genius Games, bring out these games that are just really, really fun to play and have good theme on them. And where Cytosis I thought was just kind of too much and the learning of what was happening was more important than the gameplay, I think this one pulls it off pretty well with a deck builder. There is some strange thing you have to get used to with quarks versus electrons versus protons and neutrons, but that's kind of the learning of the game. And adding the scientists into the game was a really, really good idea. I don't know that I reviewed Subatomic yet. So we've got a copy from Genius Games. I'll get another play, and I'll get that one reviewed. But I really enjoyed that, as well as Ion that they sent me earlier in the year. So that was kind of a quick run-through. If you have any questions on any of those, you can email me at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. But I just wanted to see, like, these were great games from 2018. So even if it turns out 2018 wasn't as good as 2017, I had a great year, and I could play the games from 2017. We're still playing Gloomhaven in 2019. It's really good, so we're going to play it. But that's that. So thanks, everybody. A little lighter episode today, but I got a lot of games out to you. I don't know. When I listen to podcasts, that's my favorite. I just love to hear people talk about games and, you know, find that game. They're like, oh, this game was so good, or this mechanism was so good, or this might be the game for you. And I get all excited. And, you know, negative reviews are there as well. And I had some here. Actually, what I played and reviewed here pretty much was positive on. So there's that. But... that's all she wrote. So, welcome to 2019. Thanks for listening to episode 113. What was this? We do not grant you the rank of master. Even though these games were really good, they were not my top 10 of the year. Hey, thanks everybody. I'm the Brent. And until next time, I hope you step into the portal.